Hello, 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 and welcome back to the official Palace pod. I'm Chris Grierson from Palace TV, and I think we're back after what is about an 18-month hiatus. I apologise that we have not been in your ears for 18 months, but we are back for the rest of the season. We've got some new, funky, uplifting music at the start that's different to before. But this time, I am delighted to actually have a sponsor on board, as this podcast is brought to you by Stirs. Got to be honest with you, it's a fantastic sponsor because they are the world's first zero waste coffee. I'm drinking a zero waste coffee right now. Stirs, they're a proud local partner and a hot drink supplier to the Eagles with their aim of supporting a more sustainable South London. So surely we're all on board with that. If you want to be a cool hot drink drinker like me, then you can actually try their great tasting coffee, hot chocolate if you like a more sweeter drink, on match days or by visiting shop.cbfc.co.uk. And the best thing is, the best thing about Stirs is that a portion of the proceeds from match day and web sales will be donated to the Palace for Life Foundation. So if you drink hot drinks, you'll help young South Londoners to grow through sport. Lovely stuff. Right, on with the podcast. And here is a chat that I have just had with Jason Punchin. Lovely, lovely man. He grew up in the shadow of Sellers Park with a Palace supporting family, but found himself coming through the ranks at Wimbledon on the other side of London. Is it the other side of London? No, it's a tram ride away in Wimbledon, and going on to play for MK Dons, Barnet, Plymouth, Southampton, Millwall, Blackpool and QPR, with some other non-league clubs thrown in there as well, before coming home to Crystal Palace in the summer of 2013. He went on to captain the club and is now playing for Paphos FC out in the sunshine in Cyprus. I caught up with him the day before Palace played Millwall in the FA Cup. So that is mentioned at the end, but the rest of it is all about his Palace career. He's one of the nicest guys to have played for the club since I worked here. So please sit back or go running or whatever you're doing right now and enjoy the stories of Jason David Ian Punchin. How are you then? How is...
I'm good, thank you, pal.
Yeah, we're at the academy. Have you seen any of the shots of the new academy?
I've seen aerial shots. I've seen aerial shots and I've seen some of the pictures and some of the inside of it. It looks really good, to be fair.
Yeah, it's really cool. Who are you still in touch with then at the moment? Danny,
speak to Slippy now and again. Kells, James McArthur, Scott Dan.
Lovely.
Speak to them all now and again. So yeah, hearing lots of good things about the Gaffer.
Yeah, we'll get onto that at the end. But first, I just wanted to ask about Cyprus. What's it like out there, living in a completely different country?
It's been brilliant. You know, it took a bit of, well, when I first got here, it was easy off the pitch, and it took a bit of time to adapt on it, where I hadn't played for so long consistently. But I would say it's been an amazing 2.5 years since I've been here, you know, and my kids have loved it, I've loved it, so I can't really complain.
And how did the move there come about? Did you have a few different options of different countries you could have gone to?
I'd probably say this is the most concrete one outside of the UK, you know, but comes a time when you've got to really look at things and evaluate and say, what am I gaining really by staying in England? And truth be told, I would have to probably maybe move away from my family again, go through that sort of struggle I went through at Huddersfield, and it's not nice, you know.
But, I mean, Paphos is lovely, isn't it? I've been to Cyprus a few times, and it's the nicest bit, isn't it?
Yeah, Paphos is the more family bit. It's lovely. It's lovely. It's really nice down here, so I can't complain.
Not made yourself over to Iron Appy yet?
No, not yet. I'd probably say I'm a bit too old for that.
What's the league like anyway? What's the play like in the Cypriot league?
Well, look, when I first come, it was sort of, there's three, four teams that are the top teams. Or probably say three, four teams are the top teams. And you always knew they were going to be up there. And then year on year, it's got better. And then this year is really competitive. There's only 12 teams in the league. And there's probably, because you sort of, the league splits at the halfway point. So the 12 teams then go into two groups of six, and those top six play for those Europe places. All being that as well, Cyprus has got 5 European places this year. But it's a very, very technical league. It's not a physical league. but it will catch you by surprise.
So that suits you then, I guess, because you've shifted, didn't you, from winger into central midfield. How have they been using you? Are you like a quarterback, central midfield?
Yeah, I've been just been playing in midfield since I've been here, really, holding, getting forward, however what manager we've got sees fit at the time.
Right, let's talk about Palace. So 169 games, 16 goals, 22 assists. It's the longest you've, your longest spell at any club. Would you say like Palace is right up there? You know, when you look back at your career, you see yourself mainly in your head as a Palace player.
Oh yeah, definitely. It took the bulk of my good years. You know, you look back, there are lots of memories. And I really love my time at the club.
And when you signed, so it was summer 2013, what was your situation then? You were at Southampton, weren't you?
Yeah, I was at Southampton, you know, and it was sort of like, the manager said to me at the time, he's like, look, Crystal Palace are coming for you. And all the players there at the time, they was like, don't go, stay. But like me as a player, you always look at it in two things. If a manager says to you, a club's coming for you, that's almost basically saying to you, like, go. You can turn it around, don't get me wrong. And then Crystal Palace was always... It is my home regardless of not playing for that club. And it was one of those clubs that I nearly went there three or four times. And I just thought that was the time. That time was right at that time.
But when you arrived, so as a loan at first, it's weird because we recently put together the documentary that we put on Amazon about the promotion season. And it's so weird to think that like you joining was so soon after that, because it felt like they signed so many players in the summer. It was almost like a different team at the very start of the season. What was it like walking into that with so many new players at once?
Obviously, as a new player, for me, it's like, it's a normal situation. What I did feel for is the boys there that was obviously got promoted. And once you've played with those boys, you know how they play, you know how they work. And there's always sort of a team identity. And I think you sort of lose that when you bring so many players in, because those players have got to adapt to it as well. So you're asking 10, 11, 12 players to adapt to how people have been playing already. You know, but I think anyone at the football club would say it wasn't prepared for the Premier League, Crystal Palace. At the time when I walked in that building, it wasn't a Premier League club. It didn't have a Premier League infrastructure. It wasn't run like a Premier League club. You know, but we managed to keep that status to let the club keep building.
And for Ian Holloway... It must have been weird for him at the start of that season, because we saw, just from talking to everyone and talking to him, at the end of the season before when they got promotion, they had the thing where he tried to go one way with the style of play, and then it was brought back in the playoffs, and like the last few games in the playoffs. And then was it a case of at the start of that season, he was then going back to trying to put his stamp on the team with the new players?
I think with Ollie at that time, to the way I remember him play, the way the boys were saying is, I think he had probably too many players to select from, you know, trying to keep everyone happy, getting players in. And we didn't, to be fair, we had a good bunch of lads. Nobody was moaning. There wasn't sort of people sulking, you know, and I sort of felt for him a bit, because you get to the Premier League and it's ruthless. Whatever way you play, it is ruthless. You know, and I would say he did probably try to twinkle too much.
I was looking at the lineup from your first game. I think it was away at Stoke. Marouane Chamakh.
I can probably remember this lineup.
Sorry? You reckon you can remember it?
Yeah.
Oh, go on. I'll give you a challenge because I've got it.
Speroni.
Hold on, wait. Here we go. Stoke City. So,
Speroni.
Yep, Speroni in goal.
Speroni. Dean Moxie, left back.
Yep.
Delaney.
Yep.
Gabidon.
Yep.
Joel Ward.
Yep.
Jedinak.
Yeah.
KG.
Yeah.
I played on the right.
You did.
The left. It's going to bug me, the left side. Was it Jimmy Kebbe?
No, it was a striker on the left.
I'm lost with that. I'll go back to that one in a sec, but I know Sham played up front.
He did.
And I'm trying to remember if we played three. I think we played three in midfield. There's another midfielder. Did Owen Garvin play or did he come on?
He came on.
Right, yeah. I'm two out.
Yeah, the other midfielder wasn't around for long.
Wasn't around for long?
No. But he's gone on to have quite a, eventually a...
Jose Campana.
Yep, that's the one.
Yep. He played in the midfield. He didn't play left, did he?
No, he played in the midfield, yeah. So out left.
Who played on the left?
Someone who kept their Palace suitcase after they left and used it at their next club. Do you not remember?
Went Aaron to... Wilbraham?
No. Striker.
That's really...
Didn't like doing interviews. Good finisher.
Kevin Phillips.
Dwight Gayle.
Ah, oh, Gailey did play that game. He did. Yeah, he did. I forgot about Gailey. See, you forget because of that season. I forget about Gailey till the next season where he's more involved. But you're right. Yeah, he did.
But Shamak up front. I mean, he was. I remember at that point saying he was the best player we'd ever had at Palace in terms of like technical ability.
I think with me, like love only to pieces. I think you didn't see the best of Sham until Tony Pulis came. Because he played the system that sort of worked around that. Sham was massive to that. Now, when Sham didn't play, you saw a massive difference to us.
He was quite a character, wasn't he? I remember Carl telling stories about him in the gym, like he'd bet you 50 quid about throwing a ball for a hoop and stuff. And then...
Oh, yeah. Sham was, do you know what it is? Sham was one of them. Once you know him, he's a brilliant guy. Punch, how are you? Good. And he's just smiling. You ask him every time, how are you, Sham? Yeah, I'm good. He's always smiling. That's just... They say, if Sham's not smiling, then you really know that somebody's upset him in a way they shouldn't have. Because when he was around the place, he was brilliant for us.
And what was it like? That team had so many leaders, didn't it? You had Jedinak in the midfield and then Damo at the back as well. Do you think that was like the key behind actually ending up doing well that season?
I think the key was really, I'll be honest, you had leaders in the Damos, your Mees, your Jedinaks, and later on you had a Scott Dan. You know, even Sham was a leader in his own way at times. But I think the way that Tony Pulis set up suited us as a team, and everyone bought into that. And I think that's what sort of got us through it, to be honest. And obviously us sticking together, you know.
Yeah, how different was it when Pulis came in to... Because, I mean, Ian Holloway was the one that recommended Pulis for the job, wasn't he? But on the training pitch, like, how different was it to Holloway when he took over?
Oh, very regimented. Wants to do his shape in the way he wants. But obviously, me being experienced, you know that in the way that he wants to play, he has to do that. You know, and for me, it wasn't long before you started to see them things. I remember when we went to Chelsea, that, like, not being funny, Crystal Palace, the way we'd play in that season. We went to Chelsea and we lost, I think it was 1-0. I think, and Jose Mourinho come in and said, you lot will survive the season. And that was a massive testament. I think that was after 3-4 games of Tony Pulis' tenure. And you could see a massive difference almost straight away.
When did you feel like you really settled in? Because you had a good run, didn't you, in January? Scored the winner in back-to-back 1-0 wins. I think it was against Stoke and Hull, wasn't it? Do you reckon that was when it...
That was after the penalty miss. I think going to Palace, I think the... No one really sort of saw or understood the way that I played. It took time for me to grow with the Palace fans, for them to understand me, probably till the next season when Pardew came, even when I scored all them goals. Still difficult times. But I think with Tony, I think the turning point was two things. He came to me once in January and said, Punch, do you want to sign here? And that sort of made me realise, like, right, you're not playing for a move now, you're playing to sort of stay here. And I was like, yeah, I was honest with him. I said, look, if you're going to be here, I'll stay. I said, and obviously, as long as we stay up. And then obviously missing the penalty was like, I remember half time he went mad at me. And he said, I don't care about the penalty. He said, it's your reaction. You let it go to your head and you went down. He said, that's not you as a character. He said, forget how much people's here. Forget all the newspapers, everything that's going to happen tomorrow. Go out there and show a reaction. And I did. And then after that, I was like, leading up into that Stoke game, you're nervous. And I was like, you know what, go out there and obviously respond. And I think I did that. And I think from that then on in, I didn't really look back.
Yeah, in that week between the Spurs miss and the Stoke game, obviously you had the thing with Warnock in the press and that. Were you aware of all the talk that was probably going, I'm probably sure it was all on TalkSport and going on the radios that week? Did you try and keep your head down in that kind of situation when you've got things off?
Do you know what? The best thing that happened was my manager... And the chairman rang me within 10 minutes and he was like, don't worry about it. We believe in you. Keep your head. Don't worry about nothing. Just get yourself ready for the game. And Tony Pulis pulled me on the Monday. Me and him was laughing and joking. He said, forget about it. He said, on Saturday, it's another game. It's another penalty. I want you to take it. And that's what he said to me. And then he said, just go out there and be punch, be yourself. And that's what I did. And you know, when you've got that support from within a football club, and I had the support from within my players around me, that goes a testament to far, you know, because I could have come in Monday morning, the manager saying, right, you're getting fired, you've done this, you've done that. And that's not the reaction you need, you know.
And then later on in the season, it really kicked on with that. I'm sure it was it you that said that was one of the your favourite games was the Chelsea one, the 1-0 win at Chelsea before we went on.
Yeah,
to
it was. In a row. Oh, yeah, it was. Because I think that was the start of the five game unbeaten run, I think.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, five wins in a row.
Yeah, five wins, and that basically kept us up. But to beat Chelsea at home, and if I'm honest with you, even though we scored via an own goal, I think we should have beat them convincingly, to be honest with you. The chances we had, you know, and not being funny, I had a world-class keeper, Peter Cech. He pulled off a lot of saves. Great credit to him. But for me, when that happened, and it was almost like a snowball effect into the next games. And then the pivotal one was for me is obviously you're playing Aston Villa, you're playing Cardiff, they're you know their relegation battles, but it's when we played Everton away. And that 3-2 win was massive. And then it was almost like we got to the West Ham games. I'm sure the West Ham game was after the Everton played midweek. We had the West Ham on a Saturday. And I remember everyone was flat. And we played sort of poorly first half. And then we obviously got the penalty second half. And you can see after 70 minutes, everyone was knackered. But we got the 1-0 win, and I think those games basically that five game unbeaten run basically kept us in the Premier League.
Yeah, and it was
convincingly amazing. As well.
It was amazing after that West Ham game. It's funny how cause it doesn't feel that long ago, but it already feels like an iconic shot. All of the players holding hands in front of the away end.
Do you know what? I blame my auntie for that.
Really?
Because also what happened was my auntie was at the game. She said after the game, give me a shot so she see me. And she used to love going to the away games. She didn't really like the home games. She loved to go to the away games. She's calling me. So I've gone to give her my shirt. And if you look at the picture, you can see somebody with a yellow shirt, which is obviously me, but it's not a Palace shirt. It's an undertop. I'm the only one that's actually not in the line of the picture.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
So your auntie came to games. Did your mum used to go to games as well? Because she worked in the Sainsbury's by the stadium, didn't she?
Yeah, my mum worked there years ago when she was younger. Remember, my nan used to live on Clifton Road. So my mum worked on the pub on the corner of the Jolly Sailor, and she worked, is it the Jolly Sailor on the corner?
Clifton Arms.
Clifton Arms, sorry, that's it, the Clifton Arms, she worked there. She even worked at a time at the stadium for a little while when I was younger, and then obviously Sainsbury's. But, every game I needed 25, 30 tickets, that was the normal thing, you know.
So then staying in the Premier League, and then Tony Pulis leaves just before the start of the next season after that US tour. What was it like for you guys that week?
Oh, it was a crazy week because obviously we've gone through all pre-season, we've gone through all the stuff. The only thing that did help us is we didn't really make drastic changes in the summer with the signings we made. We didn't really go crazy, and I think we still had that bulk of that squad that was there the year before, knew how to win games, knew what it took to get through. And I think going into that, and obviously the sort of the next from that August to I think it was December, that's what basically for me sort of kept us in the Premier League as those group of players.
Yeah, because Neil Warnock came in, and it was strange because Julian Speroni talked to him a lot, and Warnock was one of his favourite managers, but it was just never wasn't the same as the first time when he was there. Can you put your finger on why it just didn't work for those first few months?
No, look, regardless of the issues I've had with the guy, you've got to give me great testament to what he's done through football. But the Premier League's a different cattlefish. And for me, he wasn't ready for that tactically. We wasn't ready for that, the way we were setting up for games, what we was doing in training and stuff like that. But again, our sort of the leadership group carried us through that, those moments, knowing what to do, pulling people, keeping them on side, knowing how to get through the games to try and win the games or not lose the game. You know, and that's what sort of kept us in until that point.
And then Alan Pardew comes in, and it was brilliant, wasn't it, when he first joined? Because I remember I was working at the club then, And you could just see in training it was completely different, wasn't it? And he had quite a simple message to the players and he was trying to get the shackles off. Was it really fun those first few months?
Oh, yeah. He lifted the group massively and he lifted players, sort of told players when they needed to be told. And he was, in that sense, he was fantastic. You know, and obviously we had a great finish of the season. I still think they're... It's a weird three seasons. Those, the two biggest achievements, obviously, getting to the FA Cup final is fantastic. On a personal note, it's brilliant because you scored, but you lost. That's how I always look at it, you know. But I still think the two biggest achievements that I had as a Palace player there was that first season of surviving and the second season finishing 10th in the Premier League, you know.
Yeah, yeah, it was great. And it started off, his first home game, that 2-1 win against Spurs, and you scored in it.
Yeah.
That's the first proper punch and celebration in that corner in front of the Holmesdale. That was the atmosphere. I felt like that one, obviously you had the 3-3 Liverpool game, but that game felt incredible with the fans.
Oh, yeah, we've had some fantastic, obviously, that game. I think the Arsenal, the 3-3 Liverpool, I think the Arsenal game at home under Sam Allardyce. I think, yeah, there's been some fantastic ones.
And around that time, in terms of, like, football changing, you probably would have had it a bit before at Southampton, but, like, with club media being around, because I felt like at that point we went through a period where you had half the squad thinking, why are the media team filming training? Because, like, historically in football, the training ground was like this closed-off place that no one ever sees, and then another half maybe embracing it a bit more. What was it like as a player going through that? I get, because Southampton, at that point, they digitally, they were the guys doing everything before everyone else, so you were probably used to it, weren't you?
Yeah, I was quite used to it, to be honest with you. I think it's obviously, it started to be the normal in football. I think just going into our place, some people probably didn't understand it, like you said. And I think it's just one of the things you need to embrace. Players don't complain when you give them the video of they scoring a goal.
No, they don't. We had loads of players asking us not to put certain nutmegs out there. That's normally the problem we've got. But you just get used to it as a player, that you know that whenever you're running out onto a pitch, there could be a camera pointing at you.
Oh, yes. But I think probably, again, that sounds... I'll say it is a fact. Southampton was my biggest learning curve in terms of a football-sized club, the infrastructure, how it's run, the day-to-day business, what's going on, like you're saying, the cameras, the video analysis, all that stuff. That was a massive lesson.
And then it got even bigger the summer after that when Johan Cabaye signed. That was a real, like, It was almost like a flagship signing. It was a showing that the Crystal Palace has taken that next step up. What was it like when he came in?
Oh, yeah, I think from the outside, definitely that was the case, you know. I think, again, with Johan, you didn't see the best of Johan until Sam Allardyce came. You know, I think it was a bit difficult times with him, I think, personally, off the pitch stuff that was going on with him. But when Sam came in, you saw a different Johan.
And your position changed under Pards as well, didn't it? You went from, I guess, as fans, we maybe saw you as a winger when you first signed, and then he moved you into the more central, playing a number 10 role. Is that a position you'd played earlier in your career?
I played there earlier in my career. I think is what people don't understand is probably a bit more in a Palace side, easier to play in a 10, in a midfield three, because you can drop back out and you can go back in. And I think not... No disrespect, I know my abilities, but when you've got Wilf and Yannick both playing on either side, for me, you have to get them in the team. Okay, it took a bit of time for Wilf to develop in terms of his end product and stuff like that, but those two, up until that point of obviously when we was fifth in the league, those two was causing problems. They basically, when we was playing up until that Christmas period when Yannick got injured, they was basically attracting four players between them. So Yannick could get the ball, people were doubling up. So it gives space to me, Johan and Maka. The same would happen on the other side with Wolf. And that's why we were so successful in that period.
Yeah, in the first half of that season, the 15-16 season, we were like fourth or fifth in the league at Christmas, weren't we? And
if you remember, when we went to Leicester, that's the year Leicester won the league, yeah?
Yeah.
If I'm correct.
Yeah.
Leicester, when we played them, they was one place behind us.
Wow. and they kicked on, and then we just, we went from December, wasn't it? December till April without getting a win. But it was really strange. It wasn't like, we weren't playing bad, were we? We just couldn't, something just went.
Yeah, I think it was just a psychological thing. We did have a lot of injuries. Then we had the cup run, so that was obviously playing in people's heads a bit. We did struggle in some games, and some games we should have won and we didn't, you know. And then, obviously, being fifth at that point in Christmas, it is a downbeater when you look at where you are, because you get into April, thinking, right, we need to win a game to just two games to stay in the Premier League. From where we was 4 months ago, we was fifth.
Yeah, I saw the we posted your goal against Norwich out recently on social media, and I saw someone replying saying, oh, remind me, why was it such an emotional goal again? Because I think people have forgotten, obviously, we haven't won for months, but it was your first goal of the season as well, wasn't it? Was it a mixture?
Yeah.
Was that just a complete mixture? Like, had you, were you
completely... Yeah, just so, look, at the end of the day, when you're an important player of the squad and the pinnacle part of it, obviously, I always knew I contributed my hard work, but I went away from the goals aspect, and that eats you away sometimes as a player. And I do also think that went from, because of the positional change of knowing how to get in positions to score goals. It was difficult, but I sort of got myself through it in the end.
Yeah, we managed to stay out that season, but then the cup run, I mean, people called it papering over the cracks, because the problem with fans is it was difficult. You guess you did really enjoy the FA, the semi-final and the other games, but do you think it was kind of overshadowed by the league form falling away a bit in the earlier rounds?
I think in the earlier rounds, it was almost like, oh, it's only the cup. That's how sort of people was looking at it. They need to win in the league. But I think as we got later on after we beat Spurs, people started to realise, well, hold on a minute, we get to the FA Cup final. And I think as fans, their perspective changed. And I felt that in the stadium, even when we weren't winning the games. Because before that, when we weren't winning the games at home, the fans had that bit of edginess to them and sort of going against us at times after 30, 40 minutes. And that doesn't help. But as the cup run on got on, when we was playing the home games or away games, they were sort of, they was in the game for longer compared to how they was before. And I thought that sort of brought us probably together a bit more.
Pards was really good at making the different round, the rounds of the FA Cup, the FA Cup games, feeling a bit special. You know, always, didn't we have fish and chips at the training ground before every game, the same as they did in 1990? And then he would make special motivational videos, wouldn't he, before each one?
Yeah. Special, he's played in it. He's played in the semi, I think he played in the final, semi-final and the final, didn't he? He scored in the semi-final, didn't he? So he understands it.
And then, yeah, in the semi-final, they recreated Pardew's goal, didn't they, for Balassi's one. When he was
Balassi,
doing it,
yeah.
When you were doing it on the training pitch, did he say that we're doing the same routine that we did in 1990?
He didn't say about 1990, he just done this routine. And then obviously I knew what it was, you know.
So then you have the FA Cup, and then it felt like every season was building. And there was quite a big summer that year. We signed Benteke, Townsend, Tompkins, Steve Mandanda. But then the big moment, I remember talking to some of the players about this, was Jedinak. Obviously, he lost the captaincy, didn't he, that summer, and then left the club. Do you think that affected the start of that season a bit?
I wouldn't say that affected the start of the season. I think it affected a lot of people personally. You know, and it was a big loss losing him. It's weird, you know, just talking about captains, because it seems like all the captains of the last few years are keep getting pushed away, but yeah. I think it was a big loss, definitely. It just was a big hole, and I just wish, looking around at things between Mille and the manager, they could have found a balance that kept Mille there, and maybe him understanding, okay, all managers have a different way of thinking, like you're maybe not going to play so much and stuff like that. But I was disappointed, and I think, yeah, we did miss him a lot. If I'm honest with you, we did. Just in those tough times, yeah, his character.
Yeah, went on the bad run, and then Sam Allardyce comes in, like another entertaining manager. You had a really good time under Sam, didn't you?
For me, Sam was brilliant, because he just Sam's not one of these managers that tries to talk to you all the time and say to you, right, you need to do this, you need to do that, or I think you're doing this or doing that. Sam's just a man. So he has his instructions, you go on the pitch. All right, he might go and speak to some of the younger lads or whoever. But in terms of, I never really saw Sam telling people, come to my office, I need to speak to you for 5 minutes. He just was like, that's your instructions. This is what I expect you to do. And if you don't do it, you don't play. And that's how he was.
And he made you captain as well, didn't he, that season for the first time?
Yeah, he did, to be fair. It's funny because I was sitting there eating my food and he was brilliant, Sam. I was sitting there eating my food and he walks up to me, he slaps me on the back of the head and he says, you know, son, morning? I said, yeah. He said, you're captain today, and he just walked off. Whereas some managers, they make a big deal of it and be like, come on, I need to see him in my office. Right, I'm making you captain. Make a big thing of it. He was just like, just crap on.
I remember that run of games. It was brilliant. It was when they were doing they had all the flags with the hunters on, didn't they?
It
was like bigging up the next four games. And
yeah.
This was probably at the point where you and Palace fans was almost like the best moment, because there'd been a lot about, obviously everyone knew about you being a Palace fan. But then for you to become captain at that point as well, it felt like a really nice time for the club to have a proper South Londoner as captain. And then it was Middlesbrough, wasn't it? And then we won, was it like four games or five out of six games? It was something ridiculous like that.
Yeah, if you remember, we beat Liverpool, Chelsea and Arsenal.
Yeah.
We took 9 points off those teams. If we didn't take them 9 points, we would have been probably in a bit more trouble, but we did. And that showed once we sort of, because Sam was a bit different to Tony. His way took a bit longer to get used to. It probably took 3 or 4 or 5 games Sam's way, if you look at it. And not only that, I think the January window helped us massively when we signed Mama, we signed Luca, we signed Patrick, we signed Sloopy. That was a massive window for us.
Yeah, Sloopy, he's been such a good player for Palace.
Yeah, he's a brilliant player. Brilliant.
Because he can play in, I mean, when we signed him, I guess we thought we'd sign two left backs in one window, and then you see him and he's kind of done what you did, hasn't he? He's gone from a wide player to most managers seeing him as a central midfield player that could push on.
Yeah, I think eventually you'll go to that, I think, because he's so explosive in the middle of the pitch. Once he runs past someone, the whole game's open.
And then we do stay up, and then it's never normal at Palace, so Sam Allardyce leaves at the end of the season. And then you've got the whole summer waiting for the new manager, and then it's Frank de Boer, who obviously doesn't go down in history. Palace has been a success, but he did make you captain full time, didn't he? I think it was when we were out in Hong Kong, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Was that a big moment for you, or was it difficult because he'd take it away from Scott Dan? It's a bit of a weird thing, the captaincy. We don't really see it happening that much anymore.
I felt it was difficult because me and Danzy are close. We're still closer today. But in football, sometimes the decision is made and it's not my decision. There's nothing I can do. And regardless if Frank gave me that armband or not, I still would have been a captain within that dressing room the way I was as a person, you know. And obviously it was difficult, you know, but me and Danzy are still close to this day. It didn't affect us.
And then we get to Roy. So Roy comes in, but it was difficult for you under Roy, wasn't it? It was quite, you didn't get into the team at first, and then when you did against Man City, I mean, anyway.
No, I didn't play against Man City.
You came.
If you remember, after Roy came in one day, and then we played Southampton, and so I was in the team that day because he came the day before. And after that game, he was like, look, after a week, he was like, look, you're not going to play no more. Not going to be the first name on a team sheet. It's just a decision I made. And I was like, oh, it's funny how you can make that decision over just a week. But that's football. You know, but ultimately, me and Roy had a great, great relationship for our time at the club. And funny enough, when about 2 months before I went to Huddersfield, he came to me and he was like, you know what, I just want to take my hat off to you and say, well done. I said, why? He said, because you haven't played in a team. You was the captain, you've not been captain, and you've been training really, really, really well to a point where I'm thinking of being at times, been thinking about putting you in. I was like, look, Gaffer, I really appreciate it. I said, but the bottom line is I haven't been in. I said, but this is all for myself I'm doing. I said, I appreciate that. Thank you.
You got that injury, didn't you, against, was it the tackle on De Bruyne? Where, I mean, anyone would have thought that he had the cruciate ligament injury. But he ended up playing about 3 days later, didn't he?
Yeah, he did, he did.
Was that really hard, that moment, when you came on and then you knew you were going to be out for the rest of the season?
Yeah, it's difficult, but not in a bad way. When you're in a sort of position where you know, regardless of what you do, you're not going to play or whatever, you just, that is what it is. Not much you can do, just concentrate on your rehab. And you're doing it all for yourself, then, you know.
Anyway, I do want to talk about, I skipped over the FA Cup final. How do you feel about it now, looking back at it?
Well, you look back at it and the bottom line is no one can ever take away the fact that I scored a goal in the FA Cup final. But I look at moments of it and think we should have won that game with how we are as a how we were as a team at that time. You know, but it's a bittersweet moment. Obviously, a difficult moment because I didn't start the game. But I mean, it was all about us together. And I think the really good part for me was is, I said to everyone, I remember when I scored. And basically, nearly all that bench, I think that was on the subject. If you watch the video closely, they ran down. And they've all ran down to the corner. And that was brilliant to me. That showed up for me our togetherness and how we was.
Yeah, and it was such an emotional moment, wasn't it, for everyone in the stands as well. And I think fans struggle. It's such a shame because no one can bring themselves to watch that game back because we just felt like it was so close. Oh, hold on, the internet's dropped.
Sorry, I lost you there.
Yeah, you're back.
But.
Such an emotional moment, wasn't it? What's it like when you do that? I know the semi-final I thought was incredible. It was one of my favourite days working at the club. But the final, what's it like when you look around and there's just thousands and thousands of people?
It's weird. The semi-final to me just felt like a normal game, if I'm honest with you.
Oh, really?
Like I didn't feel that pressure. And I wouldn't say even in the final, I don't think I felt that pressure. It was more the atmosphere. Like literally, when you're in there, in that final, you can't hear nothing. So I could only imagine those players that are playing those World Cups and stuff like that. It almost felt like you was in a dream. That you can't hear the person that's 15, 20 yards away from you. It was crazy.
Yeah, how do you hear the manager in a game like that when they're shouting instructions?
It's almost like he's giving instructions to someone and giving one to another person. That's how it sort of worked out. I mean.
But when you look back on your Palace career, what are your top moments?
Individually,
for you, on or off the pitch.
I think obviously goals define games, and I think obviously scoring after the penalty miss was massive. I think then after that, sort of the obviously staying up but then finishing 10th, and obviously the FA Cup final, there's probably, I'd say, probably the three standout moments for me individually.
What do you reckon is next when you finish playing? Because I remember Pard saying, and I'm sure another manager too, he reckoned that you were most likely to go on to be a manager. Is that something that's in your thinking at all?
Yeah, I want to have a go at it. I'm just finishing up my A licence. It's something I want to do. So it's just about trying to build a path from the process of it.
You reckon you're going to have any Palace teammates in your backroom staff at all? Are you lining up Kells as assistant manager?
I don't know, you know, I'm getting old now. The thing is Kells is still young, so it's one of those things. But you never know in the future. Who knows? Because when you look at football, I'm not sure if I'm going to play next year or go into coaching. Depends what stage you go into and where all the peers you've played with, ex-managers or ex-coaches and stuff like that, and where they're at in their career.
So Palace now, do you manage to watch many Palace games on TV? Have you watched any this season?
Yeah, I do. I love the way they're playing. The way they're playing in pressing is brilliant.
How much would you love to be playing in a Vieira midfield?
Oh, I'd love it. I think if I was 28 again, I'd be really enjoying it.
And have you spoken to any of the guys that were here when you played for the club that are still here? What are they saying about training and playing?
Oh yeah, no, because I came back in October. I played golf with Macca's, Danzy, and Kells. And obviously, I speak to Danny all the time, and they was just telling me that obviously the intensity they train at, but the way the gaffer is with the ball. And I think it shows, and they said that it shows obviously what they're doing in training in the game. And the gaffer obviously is a calm character, so they can have a go, but he's also calm, and I think that's brilliant.
We've obviously got this academy here now. How much big difference do you think this academy is going to make to getting all those South London players that normally go off to other clubs?
I think it's going to be a massive difference, you know. When you look at someone like Terry Mitchell, again, who's come through the academy, I think, I don't know how many players in the last probably 3-4 years have I seen going for that team. There's quite a few that have. Two of them have definitely obviously played a lot, which is Aaron and Tyreek. You know, maybe more can come through.
Oh yeah, Aaron Wan-Bissaka. Obviously, you were there when he first made the breakthrough. What was that like for you guys when because he was a winger, wasn't he? And then they put him at right back in training and suddenly he turned into the spider.
Well, Wilf won't like me saying this, but this is how it came about. Sam, every international break, we used to play 11v11 between us and we didn't have a right back. So Sam said to down the road, well, across the academy, can you send someone over? So Dave read it and sent Aaron over Richard Shaw sent him over as a right back. And in that 11v11, Wilf did not get past Aaron once. And then from time to time, he was training with us. And then Sam started to notice more how quick on his feet he was when he's seeing him train. And Sam sort of kept him with us. And then the next season, he came on pre-season tour, sort of rid the storm of all the whole Frank thing. And then I think another pivotal point for him was in January. He said to Roy, can I go and learn? Roy was like, no, stay here. You'll get a chance to stay here. I'll give you a chance. When, I don't know, but you'll get a chance. And then obviously, he got injured or suspended. And then he started against, was it Tottenham his first game, I think? Marking Son. And we didn't see nothing of Son.
Yeah, he was brilliant. And you used to communicate with him quite a lot, especially, and a lot of the young players. You still, is that the kind of thing you do out in Cyprus as well? Are you helping some of the younger lads out there?
Yeah, I helped some of the younger guys. I did used to look after Aaron quite a lot while he was sort of integrating into the first team. And he's a brilliant lad and fair play to him, you know. He worked his socks off.
Right, brilliant. I think I've covered everything. Oh, no, I haven't. Millwall. Palace have got Millwall.
You haven't covered nothing, have you?
No. It's Jason Puncheon, FA Cup, but third round, Palace against Millwall. Obviously, you played for them for a few months, didn't you? You scored a hat-trick against Palace. But what are your memories of Millwall as a football club?
Look, for me, fantastic. Obviously, fan support. They're brilliant on the road. A nice club, nice people, lovely people down there. You know, and I think it's a South London club to me.
And what's it going to be like, the Den, because it's a sellout? We haven't seen that Palace against Millwall in a sold-out Den. It's going to be incredible, isn't it?
I think it's going to be a lot. I think it's going to be incredible for the simple fact that where Crystal Palace are at now. And it's been a long time since Crystal Palace are probably ahead of Millwall, as far as they are, no disrespect, in terms of Premier League status. How long have they been in the Premier League? Millwall's obviously where they are. And I think it's going to be... I wish I was playing.
And as a footballer, these kind of rivalries, do you kind of wish that they were in the same league? Something like Palace and Millwall?
100%, because, look... I don't want to downplay anything, but I never played in the Brighton games, but when I was there, the atmosphere, I didn't feel the atmosphere was like it's going to be as the Millwall Palace game. That's my personal opinion. Or when Palace is playing against Liverpool, because we sort of created, no disrespect, that rivalry by beating them time to time and playing good games against them, you know?
So, yeah. So, if you were still a player, this would be the one that you'd be looking forward to, Palace against Millwall.
Oh, hell yeah. Yeah. Definitely.
Look, definitely. I'm going to let you get on. What have you got planned for the rest of the day out there in the sunshine? Have you got a swimming pool?
I'm just chilling, to be fair. So if somebody like you, if you was to come out, you'd jump in the pool, but it's like 14 degrees now, so it's too cold for me. So I'm just going to chill at home. I'll probably go upstairs and just relax, watch a bit of TV, and then I'll cook my dinner in a little while.
Cool. Well, thank you very much for taking time out to chat.
No problem, bud.
All right. See you in a bit.
Cheers, take care. Cheers, happy New Year.
Happy New Year, bye. Thank you so much for listening to this podcast, and thank you again to Jason for taking time out from his afternoon relaxation activities in the freezing cold 14 degrees of Cyprus. And thank you again to Stirs for the hot liquid consumed during the chat. We'll be doing a couple of podcasts a month at least for the rest of the season, so I shall waffle on at you again in a couple of weeks. Adios. Should have looked up Greek for goodbye.